When you think of someone putting a curse on somebody else, where does your mind go? Maybe you envision something classic and occult, like a witch with her spellbook speaking Latin phrases to the skies, or somebody who practices voodoo pricking a doll with needles. That's definitely where my mind goes, or at least where it used to go. The rational part of my mind has led me to believe that curses aren't real, at least not in the way that we have come to know them. Curses aren't just something that can be intentionally set on another person by speaking in some foreign language. They're not a weight or a burden placed on an entire family due to one ancestor's wrongdoings. The way I look at it is that we have misunderstood what curses really are for a very long time. What if curses are just another way of looking at karma, specifically the darker side of karma? As they say, you reap what you sow, you put in good, you get out good, you put in evil, well, the universe will find a way to get you back. And maybe I'm getting a little bit too philosophical for the beginning of an episode, but hear me out for a second. If a curse is really just bad karma or a reciprocation of some really bad energy that one put out in their past, then what truly horrible things would children have to have done to become the victims of a curse that claimed several of the little rascal's actors' lives in the most peculiar and gruesome ways? Crack Pops, are you in? Let's crack the case. Welcome back to Crack Pop. My name is Jacob Granato, pop culture obsessor, enthusiast, and commentator. Each week, I will bring you along with me through all of my research as I attempt to crack pop culture's and humankind's darkest mysteries, conspiracies, and secrets. Today, we are following the mysterious curse of the Little Rascals. We all remember the classic film Little Rascals from 1994, which followed the neighborhood adventures of Alfalfa, Spanky, Buckwheat, Porky, Darla, and all the rest of the animated members of the so-called He-Man Woman Haters Club. The film even had several celebrity cameos, including Whoopi Goldberg, Reba McEntire, Donald Trump, Raven Simone, and Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen. But long before the 90s produced one of the most memorable films of our generation and the several iconic one-liners that are still fresh in the minds of us 90s kids today.
Quick! What's the number for 911? How do I know?
A show called Our Gang took the world by storm when it was first introduced in 1922. Our Gang was a series of very, very successful short films that started out as silent pictures, but as technology progressed into what were known as talkies, or basically just films that finally contained real spoken dialogue, the larger-than-life personalities of the many troublemaking kids really came to life. Dozens of children were cast for the show, each complete with some quirk or unique personality trait that made them stand out from the others, and by the time that the series had ended in 1944, 220 shorts in all had been released. The show followed regular, reoccurring characters like Alfalfa with his trademark freckles and cowlick that made his hair stand straight up on the back of his head, Darla, the sweetheart of a little girl who all of the neighborhood boys fawned over, Buckwheat and Porky, the two sidekicks who are often depicted delivering messages or somehow saving the day, Froggy with his croaking, throaty voice, and then several others like Waldo, Stymie, and Spanky. And if these characters all feel familiar to you, that's because they were all reimagined for the 1994 film Little Rascals, based off of these more popular Our Gang characters. Under the direction of its creator, Hal Roach, the film series lasted a little over two decades, from 1922 to 1944, more than any other film series in television history for a comedy team. And ever since its debut, Our Gang has continued to inspire countless TV shows and films that are centered on the lives of American youth, including The Sandlot and The Goonies. But one of the most fascinating aspects of the series, it's its depiction of little white and black boys and girls existing harmoniously with one another, which for the time was sadly extremely controversial. And although the black characters in the show are riddled with stereotypes, Our Gang was one of the pioneers of integration on TV, and despite hate letters and threats to the production team, they even had an entire short in its very first year being on air that poked fun at the KKK, which, like, I don't even think that we can comprehend the magnitude of that situation today. After the film series had wrapped, or before the actors were replaced by fresh, younger actors, some of the young child stars found major successes in the industry by continuing their film career. Some of them. But most of them would actually find that it was impossible to pursue careers in the entertainment industry. Some of the former child stars would go on to live pretty normal lives. They lived in normal towns, they found normal everyday jobs as tradesmen, members of the military, teachers, etc., and then died of normal causes like cancer and old age. But those were just the lucky ones, because several of the former Little Rascals or Our Gang cast members would die in some of the most unusual, unexpected, and unfortunate ways. As you will see, these range from vehicle accidents to plane crashes to suicide and overdoses and everything in between. And with how many of these strange deaths there were, paired with just how young most of them were when they perished, conspirators have been left to wonder if the lives of the former Little Rascals were cursed. For you to get the whole picture, allow me to lay out for you some of the most bizarre deaths of all. Starting with the first, Froggy.
I don't have no money, and besides, it's too hot in here.
As I mentioned, Froggy was this freckle-faced boy with these thick circular glasses, most remembered for his low, guttural voice that sounded like a frog croaking. The actor's real name was William Robert Laughlin, and after his four-year run on the show came to an end with the final episode of Our Gang ever to be released, Laughlin took a job in real life as a paperboy. He and one of his close friends would ride around town on Laughlin's motor scooter as one of them drove the thing and the other rode on the back, presumably to throw the newspapers out to the residents. Efficient. But on August 31st, 1948, when the two were out delivering that morning's paper in La Puente, California, they made a last-minute U-turn on the motor scooter right in front of a speeding truck, which slammed into the two boys. The two were rushed to the hospital, and though his friend, the one driving the scooter, would go on to survive the crash, William Laughlin was pronounced dead from his injuries at the hospital just 6 hours later. Laughlin was only 16 years old, the youngest of any of the Our Gang cast members to die. And saddest of all, the motor scooter was actually a present from Laughlin's own parents that he had received just 2 weeks before the tragic accident that claimed his life. Next up, Darla. Unlike most of her co-stars, the young actress Darla Jean Hood, who played the show's leading lady and young heartthrob, actually went on to appear in many more Hollywood films and television shows following Our Gang. But her prosperous career as an actress was cut tragically short when at just 47 years old, she headed to Canoga Park Hospital to have an emergency appendectomy. But it wasn't her appendix that killed her. Appendectomies were a pretty common, minimal risk procedure even back then, but Hood underwent a blood transfusion during this operation, which caused her to contract acute hepatitis, and this is what led to her sudden heart failure, which ultimately killed her on June 13, 1979. Sadly, she was even right in the middle of organizing a 1980 reunion with the rest of the Our Gang cast members, and the reunion that was entirely Darla's idea did go on as planned without her the following year. And just over a year after Darla was Buckwheat. Arguably one of the most remembered characters from the Little Rascals franchise, Buckwheat was this little black boy who would team up with his best friend Porky, and then the two would rally against and often outsmart the bigger kids together. Buckwheat was played by the actor Billy Thomas until the year that the show finally wrapped. Thomas enlisted in the army at 23 years old, and then upon coming home, was offered countless roles in Hollywood. He turned them down, but instead of walking away from the industry altogether, he took a job working behind the scenes as a film lab technician. Thomas attended the 1980 reunion with several of his former Our Gang co-stars, but then just a few weeks later, on October 10th, 1980, a neighbor who hadn't seen or heard from Thomas entered his home and found him lying dead in his bed. Thomas had died of a heart attack at just 49 years old, and ironically, it was on that same exact day that 46 years prior, Thomas's mother had first taken him to audition for the role in Our Gang at Hal Roach Studios. And just 1 year after him came Stymie.
How can Mississippi be anybody's father? You must mean Mistersippi.
Stymie, this clever con artist of a character, is one of the most easily recognized Rascal characters due to his large black derby cap that sits atop his bald head at all times. He was also one of the only other black cast members aside from Buckwheat. Matthew Beard was his real name, and after his role came to an end in the series, he found success as a supporting actor in several films. But by the time he entered high school, he was ready to call it quits and give up acting. But that's when things took a turn for the worst. Beard dropped out of high school and began using heroin, which quickly spiraled into a lasting addiction. He spent the bulk of his life in and out of jail on drug and theft charges, but things actually turned around for Beard when, in his 30s, he checked himself into rehab and successfully overcame his drug addiction. He then took up acting again, starring in shows like Sanford and Sons and Good Times. He even toured around the country, giving lectures to young schoolchildren on drug abuse awareness. Beard maintained his sobriety for the rest of his life, actually, which was suddenly and tragically cut short when just 2 days after his 56th birthday, Beard suffered a stroke which caused him to fall down a flight of stairs. He sustained some pretty bad head injuries from this fall, but ultimately, just 5 days after the incident, Beard would pass away from pneumonia. He was buried along with his character Stymie's iconic black derby hat. And next on our list is Mickey.
They vanished!
Played by the actor Richard Daniels, Mickey was this freckle-faced, toothy, grinned character at the time that the shorts had been silent films, but his humor and his over-the-top laugh shone through. Daniels continued acting for over 2 decades after his time with Our Gang, but later on in his life, things took a nosedive for him. He became estranged from his wife and his children, took a job as a taxi driver, and then became a chronic alcoholic. On August 20th, 1970, Daniels was found dead and alone in a transient hotel in San Diego from cirrhosis of the liver, caused by his worsening alcoholism. He was 55. Daniels was then cremated, but his remains lied unclaimed for 21 whole years, before finally one of his relatives put a name to the mysterious John Doe. His cremated remains were buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in an unmarked grave, where they can be found today, but only if you know where to look. Now, let's talk about Alfalfa. The face that probably pops into your mind when you think of the Little Rascals is the freckled, pointy-haired, wide-eyed Alfalfa Switzer, whose one mission in life is to woo Darla. But to do that, he has to avoid constant embarrassment and harassment by his sworn enemies, Butch and Woym. Alfalfa was portrayed on the silver screen by Carl Dean Switzer, who found it extremely difficult to shake his image of his iconic Alfalfa character once he had left the show. But get ready, because Switzer's story is so insane. So, first of all, several reports from former cast members indicate that, contrary to the innocent, nerdy Alfalfa he portrayed in Our Gang, Switzer was actually a huge bully off the screen who played countless practical jokes on the other kids. Reportedly, he would step on the other kids' shoes, hit them unexpectedly, carry nails in his pockets and stick them into people, and one TV historian even says that the actor who played Spanky confided in him that one time Switzer placed sharp fish hooks in Spanky's back pockets, which led him to need stitches for the wounds that he got from them. Oh, and he also apparently placed an open switchblade knife in his pocket, told Darla that he had a ring for her in that pocket, and when she dug her hands into it, she cut her hand so badly that she almost lost her fingers. Not cute, Alfalfa. And mischief just followed him into adulthood. Switzer was arrested in Sequoia National Forest in December 1958 for chopping down 15 pine trees that he was going to illegally sell as Christmas trees. The struggle. Also, I guess right before this, he had been shot at while he was getting into his car in Studio City, and the bullet pierced his upper arm, but he didn't suffer any life-threatening injuries from this gunshot, but he would eventually die from another. When he finally seemed to get his ish together, Switzer became a dog trainer, where he seemed to have found his calling. That is, until he agreed to train one of his acquaintance named Bud's dog, a Tringwalker coonhound. And during one of the training exercises under Switzer's watch, the hound ran off chasing after a bear, never to return. And needless to say, when Bud got word of this, he was pissed. And he told Switzer, "You're going to return my dog to me, or you're going to pay for how much he's worth." And being on hard times, I mean, the man was cutting trees down in national parks as a side hustle. Switzer couldn't come up with the money, so he posted signs around with a $50 reward for the safe return of the dog. One of the regulars of the bar that Switzer was also bartending at the time found the dog and brought it to Switzer during his shift. And as promised, Switzer gave this person the $50 reward, $15 of it in drinks and the rest in cash. But sometime after Switzer had returned the dog to his owner, Bud, Switzer got it in his head that, wait a minute, why did I have to pay for the dog's return? I mean, he's not even my dog, it's Bud's dog. So he goes to Bud's house, pretty inebriated, he's waving around a penknife, and he demands that the $50 be returned to him, and when Bud refuses, things escalate quickly. It's not known for sure what happens during this whole dispute, but it turns physical quick, and Switzer hits Bud over the head with a clock. Bud then leaves the room, retrieves his .38 caliber revolver from another room, and the two wrestle over it. And eventually, Bud shoots Switzer in the groin, and Alfalfa bleeds to death. Despite conflicting statements from Bud and his stepson, who, by the way, still maintains to this day that Bud shot Switzer once he had agreed to leave and walked away, The investigation into the incident determined that Bud acted in self-defense, so he was never arrested for murdering Alfalfa. Switzer was only 31 years old, and eerily, his gravestone at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery features the image of a hound. But he is not the only Switzer in this story. There was also Harold Switzer. Alfalfa, or Carl Dean's real-life older brother, Harold Switzer, was cast in the show at the same time as him, although Harold would really only ever serve as a supporting or background character. He went on to star in a few dozen of the Our Gang films, and when his time was up, he knew that show business wasn't really for him. So Harold took a job operating a washer and dryer store where he would install and service his customers' appliances. Well, in April of 1967, on one of these visits to a customer's home, Harold and his customer got into a heated dispute, and for some ungodly reason, maybe it was a Monday, Harold murdered this customer, and then he drove himself out to a deserted area in Glendale, California, where he then took his own life in his car. And that's the only information that is out there about this incident. There's no reason listed, no name of the person that he murdered or what he murdered them with, none of that. And by the way, I checked the date. It was not a Monday, it was a Friday. He was only 42. And here's one that really breaks my heart. Pete the dog.
Kill that pooch. Understand? Say, you kids get away from me.
Pete, or Petey as the rascals referred to him, is the smart and playful black and white pit bull and dear companion to all of the rascals, with that distinguishing large circle which traces one of his eyes. Side note, the dog was also Hal Roach's second highest paid actor. Anyways, throughout the years, Pete was played by several different dogs, but the first one ever, Pal, met a tragic and truly horrific end. He was poisoned in 1930. Whoever it was, and for whatever reason they did this, they got away with it, and an assailant was never named. I'm looking at you, Alfalfa. Following his death, Pell's own real-life offspring took over as the character, and every few years was cycled out by another descendant of the first Petey ever. Next up, Waldo.
In regard to this note, my good man, your illiterate friend conveys the idea of competing with me in a contest of speed by water.
Waldo was that rich little white boy with glasses who served as Alfalfa's biggest rival when it came to winning the affections of Darla. The actor Darwood Kay, who played Waldo, took on just a couple of minor roles after his run with Our Gang, but he went on to live a pretty normal and actually inspiring life. He served in the army, and then he became a minister of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He moved his family to Thailand to do missionary work for over a decade, and then he returned back to California to retire. But on May 15th, 2002, Kay, now 72 years old, was on his daily walk around his neighborhood along Arlington Avenue in Riverside, California. Sorry, it's exciting to me that this is so close to home. Kay was severely injured and killed by a hit-and-run driver. He was transported to Riverside Community Hospital, where he died from his injuries that same night. Kay is currently buried at Crest Lawn Memorial Park in Riverside. Next up, Weezer. His character, for the most part, was this tag-along little brother type of character, always wanting in on the action but never quite embraced by any of the other kids. And sadly, this wasn't that far off from the actor Bobby Hutchins' actual personality. It was reported by other cast members that the young Hutchins wasn't even allowed to have friends or interact with the other children while on set. In fact, his parents were quite abusive and controlling of him. When he left the show, he quit show business altogether, finished high school, and then enrolled in the aviation cadet program with the goal of becoming a pilot. And at the Merced Army Airfield in California, in what would become his last training exercise ever, Hutchins' plane collided with another small plane mid-flight. Hutchins was killed on impact. He was just 19 years old and just a few days shy of turning 20. And Breezy Brisbane.
You mean I'm kicked out?
Yes.
Oh boy. Well, so long, Krabby.
Breezy was known for both his very short stature and for being the troublemaking prankster of the group. The actor Kendall McComas left show business altogether and took on a trades job working as an electrical engineer at the U.S. Naval Weapons Center in China Lake, California. Things, you know, seemed to be moving along just fine for him until McComas turned 64 years old. His job basically forced him into an early retirement, and whether that was because of financial reasons or just his older age, I couldn't really find the answer, but whatever it was, it crushed something deep inside of him. And in a fit of depression, just 2 weeks shy of his last day on the job, McComas took his own life. 2 weeks later, he would have celebrated his 65th birthday. And then there was Chubby.
Some call me Norman, call me Chubsy Ubsy.
Chubby is another one of those characters that is easily distinguished from his castmates, and sadly, this is because of his large size, hence the name. The actor Norman Chaney was only 3 feet 11 inches tall, but he weighed nearly 120 pounds at the time that he was portraying Chubby in Our Gang. And this was due to him suffering from a glandular ailment. This medical condition followed him well into young adulthood, where at 17, he had exceeded 300 pounds. So an emergency surgery to help with his condition was performed on him when he was 20 years old. And by the next year, he had shrunk down to half his original size, and now weighed just 140 pounds. Obviously, he became violently ill. He ended up dying from myocarditis, or inflammation of the heart, on May 29th, 1936, at just 21 years old. Chubby weighed just 110 pounds at the end of his life. Are you starting to get the hint yet? Does it seem like these deaths are getting worse and worse? Well, obviously, and you should know how I do things by now, I have saved the worst and most bizarre deaths of all for last. Next up, my favorite name of all of the rascals, Bone Dust.
Who gave you those answers?
Bone Dust!
Robert, where did you get those answers?
Out of this book.
Described as balancing between the tag-along kid and the comic relief, Bone Dust was by no means the most popular little rascal, but the actor Robert Young's death was one of the most tragic of all of the cast members. After his time on Our Gang, Robert served some time in the US military, and when he got home, he returned to show business and changed his screen name to Clifton Young. He took on several minor roles in big Hollywood releases, and his future looked pretty promising. That is, until it all went up in flames. Literally. Because on the night of September 10th, 1951, while Young was sleeping in a hotel room, he was burned alive in a fire that was thought to have been started by his own cigarette. Whether this was a suicide attempt, a murder cover-up, or a tragic accident, no one knows for sure, though some insist that Young and his wife had gotten into a pretty nasty fight earlier that same day. Young was only 34 years old when he died. Then we have the incomparable Dorothy Dandridge. One of the only African American females to ever be portrayed in the Our Gang shorts, Dorothy's character was one of the many school children who were cycled through the films. Dandridge, however, was just getting started. Her career in Hollywood really took off, and the young and honestly strikingly beautiful starlet blossomed. She starred in countless films in title roles and even recorded music and starred in Broadway musicals, truly paving the way for other Black Americans after her. Dandridge was even the very first African American woman ever to be nominated at the Academy Awards for Best Actress. But unfortunately, things didn't stay this way for long. She was married to a man named Jack Dennison, but in 1962, they divorced due to allegations of domestic violence. And then shortly after that, Dandridge discovered that those who were handling her finances had stolen $150,000 from her, and that she owed $140,000 in back taxes. Not having much of a choice, and with her career quickly dwindling, Dandridge was forced to sell her home in Hollywood and place her daughter in a state mental institution. As her popularity faded, Dandridge resorted to performing in nightclubs. And then in 1965, her manager found her lying naked and unresponsive in her apartment. She was pronounced dead at the scene. A pathology report attributed her death to an accidental overdose of an antidepressant. However, this was challenged by the LA County Coroner's Office, who determined that Dandridge had actually died of a fat embolism, which is when fat globules are released into the bloodstream, resulting from a fracture that she had sustained to her foot just 5 days before her death. Dandridge was only 41 years old. In her last conversation she ever had while she was alive, she left her friend with this ominous message the night she passed. Quote, "Whatever happens, I know you will understand." End quote. And who could forget the Doty twins? Actually, apparently a lot of people could forget them, because when I was researching this episode, I didn't find any article anywhere about these twins. I honestly just kind of happened to stumble across it when I was reading through all of the names of all of the child actors. So, the Doty twins were only active in the series during the time that they were silent films, but although they had never spoken a line, Winston and Weston Doty were still celebrated as being two adorable neighborhood brothers who obviously had to do everything in unison. After quitting show business, the brothers both attended the University of Southern California, where they studied architecture, but were also cheerleaders for the school. Yes. Then in 1934, when they were both just 21 years old, the two were driving home from a New Year's Eve party in California with their two dates, when a huge flood, which has since become known as the 1934 New Year's Flood, came and swept their car away with the rainwater. Their bodies were discovered shortly after at the bottom of a wash in Los Angeles. Their obituary reads in part, quote, "Weston and Winston Doty, famous twin cheerleaders of the University of Southern California who were victims of the California cloudburst, dying as they were born and lived together. They were swept to death in the roaring flood." End quote. Then there was Scotty.
"I think we ought to go."
The character Scotty, played by Scott Beckett, was the star character Spanky's partner in crime. He was easily distinguished by his backwards cap, his oversized sweaters, and an even bigger ego, which would often frustrate his more cool-headed BFF Spanky. And after his run on Our Gang, the actor Beckett actually went on to have one of the most successful film careers of any other of the Rascals, landing huge roles, even starring alongside Shirley Temple and later Marilyn Monroe. But when he got a little bit older, he started to develop a reputation on set for being a drunk and a gambler who never paid his debts. And this reputation harmed his career forever. When he finally stopped trying to stay active in the industry, his life got even more tumultuous as he was arrested several times for drunk driving, passing bad checks, and drug possession. And fast forward a few years to May 8th, 1968, Beckett just walks nonchalantly into a Los Angeles nursing home to receive medical attention after receiving a pretty severe beating. The details of what exactly or who exactly harmed him were never clarified, and just 2 days later, on May 10th, Beckett was discovered dead in his room next to a bottle of sleeping pills and a handwritten note. Which might sound to you a lot like a suicide, right? Like, case closed. Well, not quite, because the LA County Coroner's Office officially listed his cause of death as unknown or inconclusive. Beckett was just 38 years old. And okay, are you ready for some real tea? Let me tell you the story of Pinky. Pinky was another skinny, freckle-faced neighborhood boy who appeared in almost 40 of the Our Gang shorts. But the actor Jay Smith found that once the series transitioned into talkies, he no longer wanted to be in the shorts, and he ended his acting career forever in 1929. And he lived a pretty fulfilling life. He served in the US Army and then took a job in the retail paint business. He met and married a woman who he moved his life over to Hawaii with. And then he would remain married to her until her death in 2002. But the same year that she died, Smith followed suit, but in a more tragic way. Smith was 87 years old now, and when his daughter couldn't get a hold of him one day, she reported him missing. And after an extensive search in the surrounding deserts of Las Vegas, Nevada, his body was finally found on October 5th, 2002. And Smith had been stabbed to death. It turns out that Smith, being a humanitarian and seeing the good in everyone, had befriended a homeless man. He even reportedly allowed this man to move into his home following his wife's death, likely just so he could have a companion. But the homeless man had other intentions, and he was charged and convicted of Smith's murder in addition to pawning his belongings, stealing his car, and fraudulently using his credit cards after dumping 87-year-old Smith's body in the middle of the desert. And finally, everybody, here is the story of Mickey.
I got no dad. You know, no, I get that guy that said meow.
Not to be confused with the other Mickey that I already mentioned before. That first Mickey was the one who died of alcoholism in that homeless shelter whose remains were unclaimed for 21 years. But this Mickey's story is actually even worse than that. This Mickey was another one of those tag-along characters at first, but with very obvious screen appeal, he was promoted to Spanky's best friend, and then later even becoming sort of the leader himself of the entire group. But the actor Robert Blake's performance in this role was often criticized for being too whiny, too unconvincing, and too obnoxious. Ouch. This early criticism would not follow him into adulthood, though, where literally spanning the next 7 decades, Blake maintained a very active career in Hollywood, starring in dozens of films and TV shows. But beneath the surface was a more tragic story. Blake had reportedly been so badly abused physically, mentally, and sexually as a young child that as soon as he turned 16, he changed his birth name and cut off all ties with his former family members. Then, amidst his early success in acting, he was drafted into the military, and when he came home, he fell victim to a 2-year-long heroin and cocaine addiction. Luckily, he was able to pull himself out of it with some help from attending rehab, and his long successful career revved right back up again. That is, until the year he met Bonnie. In 1999, a woman named Bonnie Lee Bakley caught his attention, and the two fell madly in love with each other. Despite her having a bad reputation of stalking celebrities and being both a scam artist and a gold digger. I mean, Bonnie had already been married 9 times by the time that she roped Blake in. And just 1 year later, in the year 2000, Bonnie gets pregnant with Blake's child. Or at least that's what he thought. Bonnie gives birth to her daughter and names her Christian Shannon Brando. Yes, Brando. Because at the time that Mickey and her are dating, she's also dating Christian Brando, the son of the late actor Marlon Brando. She then tells both of the men that she wasn't sure who the father was, and I don't know, I guess she just went with the more attractive, bigger name, but Blake was like, no, that's my kid. So he had a DNA test done, and it was confirmed that Blake...
You are the father!
So then I guess he forgives Bonnie, and they get married, and the couple change their daughter's name to Rose Lenore Sophia Blake. But get this. So yeah, they get married, but the two live in separate houses on the same property. I guess he even reportedly hired a private investigator to spy on her at all times. That's never a good sign. But things must have escalated because the next year, on the night of May 4th, 2001, Bonnie Lee Bakley was found shot to death in Blake's car around the corner from Vitello's Italian restaurant in Studio City, California, where the two had just eaten dinner. The event was strange, to say the least. I guess the car was parked out of sight and behind a dumpster, and Mickey's side of the story was that he had left his gun inside the restaurant, casual, so it was when he went inside to retrieve his gun that someone came up and shot Bonnie to death. Him producing that story sounds like just somebody trying to establish an alibi or something, but I mean, what do I know? But whatever happened that night, whether it was him who pulled the trigger or a hitman who he had hired, Blake served time while the case went to trial, but he was acquitted of her murder due to a lack of hard evidence, and he walked away a free man. Years later, Bonnie's 3 older children sued Blake for the wrongful death of their mother. They fought for $30 million originally, but he ultimately only had to pay them $15 million. Blake remains one of the only living Our Gang stars and walks around as a free man today. So, did you guys learn something today? And what do you think is to blame for all of these strange and mostly early demises of all of these child stars from Our Gang? Here's my take on what I think is really going down behind the deaths of the Little Rascals. I think there are 2 possibilities here. Either there's some strange haunted curse that cut their lives short, or all of these deaths are just coincidental. Scenario 1. Though they might be tragic, the young actors' deaths are entirely unrelated. If you go to Snopes.com, aka where conspiracy theories go to die, they've got some pretty convincing evidence that points to these deaths all being just coincidental. They actually sum it up so well, so I'm just gonna quote them here. Quote, If one were to choose any group of 30 or so people born in the US in the 1920s and 1930s and follow them through the course of their lives, it wouldn't be the least bit unusual to find that several of those people died well short of the average life expectancies of their times due to disease, accident, homicide, or suicide. People get sick, die in accidents, and kill each other or themselves all the time. These are the facts of life, sad as they are. Such deaths may be tragedies, but they're hardly outside the pale of ordinary human experience. End quote. And then there's something else that might be at play here. Confirmation bias. We've talked about it before on the show, but basically that's just seeking out or only paying close attention to new information that seems to support or confirm an idea that you have. So in this case, the deaths that I've outlined here are only the strangest and the most unbelievable that seem to support the idea that an entire group of people were cursed and that we have purposefully left out the ones who didn't fit that narrative. So that would be like all the child actors from our gang who went on to live normal lives and die in more normal ways. So to be completely fair, let's do that now. Let's go there. Here are some of the more happier stories from the cast of our gang. Jackie Cooper became the first child to receive an Oscar nomination, and he was the youngest actor at the time to be nominated for the Oscar for Best Actor at just 9 years old. He also had a very successful and fulfilling film career as an actor, TV director, producer, and executive. And also Mildred Kornman, who is still alive at 95 years old today, at the time of this recording anyway. And she went on to become a very successful fashion model who graced the pages of magazines like Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. And there are countless more who went on to have mildly successful careers in Hollywood and then married and had kids and then eventually died due to more common causes like cancer and heart disease. It's just unfortunate that a select handful of the child actors met a more depressing end than the others. In 1973, when asked about the Rascal's curse that had been circulating among fans and tabloids for decades after the last Our Gang short, creator Hal Roach had this to say. Quote, "Naturally, some got into trouble or had bad luck. They're the ones who made the headlines, but if you took 176 other kids and followed them through their lives, I believe you would find the same percentage of them having trouble later in life." End quote. But where do you draw the line between trouble and just flat out cursed? Scenario 2. Some dark cloud hung over the heads of many of the child stars, leading many of them to their unusual deaths. First off, I think Hal Roach's point is misleading. Yes, I do think that if you follow a group of child actors, many of them will end up having trouble, as he calls it, like, you know, the alcoholism, depression, the suicidal tendencies, like, got it, Hal, I couldn't agree with you more. But it's when you take a deeper look into the more bizarre deaths that you're faced with this possibility that, like, yeah, something else might be going on here. And I'm talking about those deaths that are hard to explain away by just coincidence, like Bone Dust dying in a fire that was believed to be started by his own cigarette while nobody else in the hotel was harmed, Petey the dog who was poisoned and killed, though nobody ever learned who or what had done it. Froggy's accident in the motor scooter that his parents had just purchased for him. And then the Doty twins getting swept away in their car in a giant flood in California. Like, it's all in the details for me. I don't know how curses work or even why this cast of young actors would have become the victims of a curse in the first place, but to me, it feels like something was trying to take them out purposefully, influencing their deaths in just subtle ways to make them almost appear like normal events, but slightly missing that mark. And okay, even if some evil witch person or whoever starts curses didn't stand there and physically place a curse on the young actors, it is undeniable to me, I won't even argue it with anybody, that being on this show in the first place left these young actors with some really damaged mental healths. And that to me is a curse. It's actually even worse than a curse. Like, how many times did you hear me say addiction, alcoholism, antidepressants, jail in this episode? And the ones who had the most damaged, most cursed mental states from their time on the show are probably the ones who resorted to violence, and they were violent. Alfalfa bringing a knife to the dog owner's house, his brother Harold killing his home appliance customer for some reason, and then freaking Mickey Blake, who probably got away with murdering his wife. And okay, the Snopes article might be pretty convincing. I mean, they talk about how it's only a select handful of the 170-some child actors who acted in Our Gang that met tragic ends, but hear me out. How many of the characters' names that I named for you today did you recognize? Probably a lot of them, right? And why? Because they were the most popular and most memorable characters. It would make the most sense for a curse to start at the top and make its way down. I mean, who's gonna care if some background extra who had one episode was shot in the groin and killed over $50? Probably never would have heard about it. But when it's Alfalfa, the main character in the series, the news spreads. The fear of the surviving cast members probably grows, and the curse gets stronger. It was pretty late when I wrote that last part. Do I sound delusional to you? Probably. Again, I'm not sure how to argue that curses are real, or who even opened what kind of portal to cause the lives of these young actors to meet their tragic ends. All I know for sure is that there's something a lot darker than just chance or bad luck going on here. So, crack pops, what camp are you in? Are you in Camp A, where, despite the urban legend that the children's film franchise was cursed, the members of the Little Rascals who all died tragically were just unfortunately the victims of ordinary life and ordinary deaths? Or are you in Camp B, where the crippling mental states and the strange details surrounding the deaths of many of these child actors is really all the proof you need to believe that curses can be placed on any one of us for any reason and at any time? Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Crack Pop. For pictures, videos, and source material for this episode, you can visit our website at crackpopnetwork.com. And if you're enjoying the show, please, please, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you're listening. Also, I just wanted to give a huge shout out to my dad for being the one to first introduce me to this conspiracy theory. I had never heard about it before. Do you have the sudden urge to watch Little Rascals now? I do. I'm going to this weekend after all of this is edited and posted. I will return next Monday with part one of the Chambers family's ghost story, where I will introduce you to my friend Ronnie and just how one night a foolish fun with a Ouija board invited some truly terrifying entity into her family's home. See you soon.